DW Africa Link.
This is Africa Link, broadcasting live from Bonn, Germany. And your host today, it's me, Assumpta Latus, and...
And me, Abubakar Jallo. Remember, we are live on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and also through our partner radio stations.
Coming up on the program, we will be going to Nigeria, where people are unhappy about President Buhari's list of cabinet nominees, which exclude young people and women.
This country is not ready to bring people that have the energy, that have the capacity, that have the power to move this country. And we all know they are the youth.
And we will also be going to Khartoum, where army officers have been arrested for attempted coup. We speak to our correspondents there in Sudan.
According to the TMCs, these 12 officers, some of them at the National Security, others at the Sudanese Army.
And in the UK, the new Prime Minister Johnson promises Brexit with or without a deal. That's just a few of topics on our menu today. But first, let's hear other news making headlines around the globe.
DW News.
I'm Kai Dombach with the DW News. Police in Mogadishu say a suicide bomber walked into the office of the mayor on Wednesday afternoon and detonated explosives. The incident occurred during a security meeting. The mayor was critically wounded and was rushed to hospital. Two district commissioners were among the dead. It is unclear who was responsible for the attack. Sudanese military officials say security forces have arrested at least a dozen people, including high-ranking army officers, for allegedly plotting a coup. According to the military officials, the arrested officers were working for Sudan's military and intelligence services. The alleged coup plot is the second reported this month in Sudan. Ugandan pop star and leading opposition figure Bobby Wine has announced he will run against President Yoweri Museveni in the 2021 national elections.
This country is bigger than all of us. It is bigger than any of us. Uganda was there before the coming of colonialism. Uganda was there after colonialism. Uganda was there before dictatorship. And yes, Uganda will be there after dictatorship.
Wine has been in parliament since 2017 and has been a leading critic of Museveni. This news comes to you from Deutsche Welle, Germany's international public broadcaster. Former U.S. Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller was back in front of the House Judiciary Committee on Wednesday to defend his report into alleged Russian interference with the 2016 U.S. presidential election. Mueller told House Committee Chair Jerry Nadler that the report did not exonerate U.S. President Donald Trump.
So the report did not conclude that he did not commit obstruction of justice. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And what about total exoneration? Did you actually totally exonerate the president?
No.
Now, in fact, your report expressly states that it does not exonerate the president.
It does.
Theresa May officially stepped down from her post as British Prime Minister Wednesday, as newly elected Conservative leader Boris Johnson takes over. During her final speech at 10 Downing Street, she said she will still serve her country.
I'm about to leave Downing Street, but I'm proud to continue as the Member of Parliament for Maidenhead. I will continue to do all I can to serve the national interest and play my part in making our United Kingdom a great country with a great future, a country that truly works for everyone.
The U.S. Federal Trade Commission fined social media platform Facebook $5 billion on Wednesday for privacy violations. The fine comes after the data of 87 million users was accessed by a London-based political consulting group that worked with U.S. President Donald Trump's election campaign. It is the largest ever fine the FTC has placed on a tech company. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Kai Dombach.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link program live from Bonn with me, Assumpta Latus.
And I am Abubakar Jallo. As usual, our show is live on Facebook. We are always happy to have your comments there and we will always read them whenever we can.
Now, we kick off the show in Nigeria. President Muhammadu Buhari's list of cabinet nominees has sparked a huge debate in the country. 43 politicians were nominated, and of the number submitted, only 5 are women. But more surprisingly, no one is below 40.
And this contravenes the Not Too Young to Run Act of Parliament, which was meant to encourage more young people to get into politics. Zaharuddin Umar Azmo.
The release of the names of the ministers has put a stop to a long-awaited time for young people to see how second tenure of President Buhari will look like. Many young people say the ministerial list shows that Nigeria is not ready to explore the ideas of the young minds. Aliu Dahiru Aliu is a young activist.
This country is not ready to bring people that have the energy, that have the capacity, that have the power to move this country. And we all know they are the youth. When it comes to the development, youth are always at the forefront because they are the peerless people that think whatever can be done, it can just be done.
The major problem of young people in Nigeria is unemployment. Sebowaihi Sambo, the president of Association of Northern Nigerian Unemployed Graduates, says abandoning young people at the helm of affairs is not acceptable.
We are going to use this opportunity to call on the federal government that the list should be reshuffled, because in as long as it's not reshuffled, the young people will not be carried along and most of the policies will be old policies.
In April last year, President Muhammadu Buhari signed Not Too Young to Run Bill into law. The aim of the bill was to remove barriers for young people wishing to contest election. With the passing of the law, many young politicians hope that they will be given chance to exhibit their talents in governance. Here is what some young people are saying.
I feel very bad as a youth because us youth that are coming up now will feel bad, like we are not motivated to have a good position like ministers.
This recent ministerial nominee submitted by Mr. President is in contradiction with the law he signed in his first tenure.
Bedrabiu Isa, a young analyst in Kaduna, says keeping aside the young people in the ministerial list may not affect governance.
We have seen in the past, many people do their own best. They do without young people in their administration, and they do well. I believe Buhari can do well without young people in his cabinet.
Nigerian legislators have today started screening of the 43-person ministerial list.
Zaharuddin Umar with that report there. Asupta, we have a couple of comments there on this.
Actually, we do. And I have one from Macphil Festus. He says, the system in Nigeria is irredeemably corrupt. Even the young politicians will tell the same line if given the position. It's a cycle.
Indeed, a similar one here from Caleb Chauro, writing all the way from Nairobi, Kenya. He says, from the trend, it's better to have old and experienced people in power. Us young people, after ascending to power, we forget the purpose and start looting with a vision to become rich.
Wow. Then keep the debate flowing and we will read your comments as soon as we can. And now to a story that has dominated newsrooms around the world. Boris Johnson took office as British Prime Minister on Wednesday, vowing to implement the result of the 2016 Brexit referendum and lead Britain out of the European Union. He has just 99 days to make good on his promise to deliver Brexit by October 31st.
But Brexit is not the only problem Johnson will have to deal with. Earlier this week, Britain announced a Europe-led maritime protection mission to safeguard the route in the Straits of Hormuz after a British tanker, the Stena Imperial, was seized. With the selection of Eurosceptic Boris Johnson as Prime Minister, many are wondering if he is the right man to tackle this problem with Iran. Michael Oti with more.
With just over 3 months before Britain is expected to leave the European Union, Boris Johnson has no time to lose and is expected to swiftly announce his cabinet and advisers. His first move was to appoint as top aide Dominic Cummings, the Brexit campaign chief in the 2016 EU referendum, in which Johnson played a leading role. Johnson has vowed to renegotiate former PM Theresa May's deal or take Britain out of the bloc at the next deadline, October 31, without a deal.
We are going to energize the country. We're going to get Brexit done on October the 31st. We're going to take advantage of all the opportunities that it will bring in a new spirit of can-do. And we are once again going to believe in ourselves and what we can achieve. And like some slumbering giant, we are going to rise and ping off the guy ropes of self-doubt and negativity.
Another point of contention that is expected to be a test of his government is how he deals with Iran. Britain this week announced plans to develop and deploy a Europe-led maritime protection mission to safeguard shipping after the Stena Impero was seized in the Strait of Hormuz by Iran's Revolutionary Guard on Friday. But with his anti-EU posturing, many are wondering if he would pursue this idea. Iran's President Hassan Rouhani on Wednesday said he would consider releasing the vessel if Britain takes similar steps to release an Iranian oil tanker seized by the British Royal Navy off Gibraltar earlier this month.
We do not seek continuation of tension with some European countries. Should they be committed to international frameworks and give up their wrong actions, including what they did in Gibraltar, they will receive a proportional response from Iran too, in return for their suitable action.
The UK's Foreign Secretary Jeremy Hunt says the UK did not want to join the American campaign of maximum economic pressure, since the UK, unlike the US, remained supporters of the Iran nuclear deal signed in 2015. However, with talks of Boris Johnson's cozy relations with the US President Donald Trump, it is unsure how he will approach the crisis. One thing, however, is clear. How Boris Johnson deals with the Iran crisis will most likely define the rest of his tenure.
Oh, well, yeah, Michael Otte reporting.
Now let's take you to a story back in the African continent. The Sudanese security forces have arrested at least a dozen people, including high-ranking army officers. They are accused of allegedly plotting a coup against the country's ruling generals. The arrested officers worked for Sudan's military council, the TMC, and the National Intelligence and Security Services.
The alleged coup plot is not the only one reported this month in Sudan. The military council said earlier in July it arrested at least 16 active and retired military officers over an attempted coup. Sudan's ruling generals and a pro-democracy movement have yet to sign the second, which is the final part of a power-sharing deal. For more on the story, I spoke to our correspondent Al-Zanusi Adam in Khartoum.
Most people haven't even heard of the arrest, but the recent arrest, according to the TMCs, these 12 officers, some of them at the National Security, others at the Sudanese Army, they are plotting a coup against the current transitional council. It's also been reported that Ali Adiger has been arrested. Ali Adiger used to lead the people's security. These were forces used to do the jihad in South Sudan. And also Zubair Ahmed Al-Hassan as well, been arrested, is known. They've been taken Bahri detention. And then also the military council is saying they have compelling evidence against those officers who are arrested.
And what will happen to them, I mean, after being arrested? What are the steps that are going to be taken?
We don't know, but they said they have the evidence. That means this time they're going to actually be tried, and maybe convicted.
And how ablow is this to efforts made to try and bring the country to a peaceful state?
I think this says a lot. This says that the military council is working to ensure that this new deal and the new transition smoothly happens away from any military coups or any chaos in the country.
Al-Zanusi Adam speaking from Khartoum.
And the comment here from Bogba Ronald regarding our top story on Nigeria. It says that the fact that Buhari made this, it's a clear decision that Nigerian politics is only for old people. Keep your comments coming here on Africa Link, and we will always get to them whenever we can. If you've just joined us, this is DW's Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. My name is Abubakar Jalo.
And I am Assumpta Latus. We are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. And talking about that, I would like to welcome not only Ineke Mills, but also Bogba Ronert, Miriam Mokowiza Kaliza. You are listening to us from all the way Malawi,
yeah. Yes.
Rajib Rostum Povar, you are saying good day to all. Well, wonderful. Good day to you. Yeah.
Anyways, coming up in the next 15 minutes, Ghana warns farmers about the spread of the deadly mold aflatoxin.
Some studies that have been conducted around here shows that it is very widespread, especially not just in groundnut, but also those materials that you go to the supermarket and buy.
Stay with us only for a little while to find out what aflatoxin is. But first, in Liberia, the government there has begun austerity measures to cut down officials' and workers' salaries. The government is acting on the advice of the International Monetary Fund in a bid to help Liberia achieve economic stability.
Now, if successfully implemented, the austerity measures will reduce the country's high wage bill from $330 million to $300 million. President George Weah is facing issues to deal with salary payments since he took office. Evelyn Pade in Monrovia. More.
It's been 2 months since civil servants received their salaries. Many are now frustrated with the way the president is handling the situation. It is why the International Monetary Fund has urged the government to cut down salaries and harmonize all remuneration as a condition for its support. Mariah Colombo supports the exercise, but wants the saved money be used to improve the health sector.
Cutting a pay down for me is good.
Cutting the pay down for me, it's good, but it should be used for the Liberian people, specifically for the health sector, because people die every day. There is no medicine in the hospitals. Sometimes they tell us to buy our medication from pharmacies. It is not supposed to be this way. In big hospitals, everything is supposed to be there.
Everything is supposed to be there.
With over 70% of the population living below $1 a day, legislators here earn $14,000 to $15,000 monthly, higher than neighboring Guinea and Sierra Leone. Liberian legislators may have to make the ultimate sacrifice for the proposed pay cut to $6,000. Legislators have reacted differently to the proposed salary cut. Peter Coleman, a member of the Liberian Senate, had this to say about the austerity measures.
For all countries around the world, we rely on the expertise of the IMF, and the IMF gave vivid assessment of the status quo of our economy. For us as Liberians, I don't think we have a choice. If we don't listen to the IMF, it's going to get worse. The IMF has told us, once we demonstrate that we are fiscally disciplined, they will help in terms of our reserve to bring that credibility back to the monetary sector. If the price we have to pay for such austerity is to reduce our salaries, many of us as legislators, it's a bitter pill, but we must swallow it. We don't expect other people in the other branches of government making that sacrifice, and we must be spared.
Hansen Kezulu, a member of the House of Representatives, thinks otherwise about the process.
The government came in and increased the payroll by almost 40%. Now they can no longer manage the payroll. If the executive take decisions without submitting the budget to us and negotiating for that pay cut or harmonization that will affect the three branches of government, we see it as breach of the law. From my elementary economics, salary cut is not economic reform. We should get into more productive initiative to get the economy of this country going ahead. In the harmonizations, you don't reduce pay because pay is a standard set.
a report by Evelyn Pardé from Monrovia. And now we have comments from you, our listeners. And the first one is from you, Lemuel Karoma. You're saying, following these conditions is not a panacea. Of course, it's a stepping stone, but the issue lies with the knowing how to manage an economy.
And one from Adinsi Ndawa, he says, I don't trust the IMF. It has crippled many economies, including some African economies.
And one Montalaba, you're saying, name one country that ever turned things around, except for the worse, by following IMF's advice. George Weah is failing his people miserably.
On the spot.
And now for our current story right on the spot. A public campaign is ongoing in Ghana to sensitize farmers about aflatoxin. It's a poisonous substance that grows in the soil in the form of molds. These molds regularly make their ways into our staple foods such as cassava, rice, peanuts, sorghum and more.
Health experts have warned that consuming a high percentage of aflatoxin-infested grains, peanuts, for example, and sorghum, can lead to cancer and cause stunting growth among children. Poor farming methods, such as wrong storage, are largely accountable for this. Maxwell Suk has more.
Mabamunu is separating bad maize from good ones at the Abuabu Grains Market in Tamale. She has traded in grains all her life and she often runs at a loss due to mold-infested maize.
If there are bad ones among the grains, customers won't buy it because the bad grains are not good for our health. So I always have to sort them out first to make sure it's safe.
Scientists say when grains are infested with molds, it develops cancerous toxins, which is harmful for human and animal consumptions. Richard Oteng Frimpong, a research scientist with the Savannah Agriculture Research Institute, SARI, says recent studies found dangerous levels of aflatoxin in grains and cereals in Ghana.
In the last 2-3 years, some studies that have been conducted around here shows that it is very widespread, especially not just in groundnuts, but also those materials that you go to the supermarket and buy. So we've taken samples from these places and we've analyzed them and we have seen that they contain unacceptable levels of aflatoxins.
In Europe, aflatoxin levels above 4 ppm, that is parts per million, are not allowed. But in Ghana, researchers found as high as 60 to 80 ppm in grains. Aflatoxin affects more than 5 billion people in developing countries, studies suggest, and Ghana is not an exception. Aflatoxin can also cause stunting growth among children, nutritionists say. This is why the country is educating farmers and processors to reduce their menace. Ghana's Food and Drug Authority is part of the organizations leading the campaign. Northern Regional Director Martin Kusi explains further.
When you come to this part of the country, most farmers and then traders don't observe what we call good practices. Most food products are not handled well. Therefore, they are all susceptible to aflatoxin contaminations. That is why this public education is very necessary to make sure that, you know, the products are harvested well, transported well, stored well, and then are processed well, so that, you know, we'll be able to avoid, you know, the menace of aflatoxins.
Madina Isahaku is preparing for Sapa, a local dish called Tuonsafi, or TZ for short. TZ is a popular corn meal for people of northern Ghana. It is the main staple crops cultivated by a majority of Ghanaian farmers for decades. But Madina, unlike many Ghanaians, knows little about aflatoxin.
I'm worried because I don't know anything about the cancerous aflatoxins in the grains. So if I'm going to buy my cereals, I'll check well.
But checking well as a layperson may not entirely be the solution because it often takes laboratory procedures to detect the toxins. However, scientists recommend proper methods of harvesting and storage by farmers and processors as the first step of eliminating aflatoxin.
Very dangerous disease there. Ghana, be careful. And the report there by Maxwell Sook.
Living Planet Africa.
Now, in many places in Africa, apes are threatened. That's because there's large-scale deforestation in many countries, but also due to the spread of farming. The animals have found one of their largest sanctuaries in Uganda.
That's because there is an especially high density of primates in Kibale National Park, a total of 13 different species. So now the park has become one of the country's most important tourist attractions. Suahil Mugabe joined a group of tourists and filed this report, which is now presented by Mimi Mefo.
A group of tourists heads deep into the Kibale National Park to catch a glimpse of the forest's famous inhabitants, Sorchus, the red Colobus monkey. Nowhere would you find a higher density of primates than in western Uganda. It boasts 13 species in all, not including humans. Like humans, chimpanzees build new nests every day and are constantly on the move. Gordon Akampurira is a ranger of the Kibale National Park.
Making nests is very, very important on different places because it is one way of avoiding the enemies or predators and also cleanliness. Chimpanzees keep changing nests.
After more than an hour of tracking, the group discovers the chimpanzees, or rather, chimps discover them, and they call out to notify the others. For the group of habituated animals, it's not their first contact with tourists. Still, they could be dangerous, so visitors have to follow the rules, like maintaining a distance of at least 8 meters. Chimpanzees eat ants and termites, but also fruits and meat. They are fairly safe in Kibale because the people benefit from their being protected. 20% of the park and other entry fees goes to the local community, and residents get controlled access to the forest. Gordon explains what it takes to get into the park.
If you need firewood, grasses, and other people come for seedlings from the park for specific tree species, they can write through the management. After writing, they are given a date, and it must be a big group. They are given a date and they are given protection. They go in the forest and they pick what they want.
It comes as a surprise to many to learn that chimpanzees hunt and eat other primates, as Alex Turiantunga, ranger at Kibale National Park, explains.
He's one of the good hunters. Mm. When it comes to the chimps hunting the monkeys, preferably the red colobus monkey, black and white colobus, then they hunt baboons for the babies. The target is always to grab the babies, then they eat meat.
Chimp trekking is one of the park's most popular attractions. Each foreign tourist pays $150 to visit the park. Peace Mohindo, a tourist, says they now understand the threatened species better after the tour and are more likely to take a stand for their protection.
It was a great experience. These guys actually look like us. They relax in the trees like we do at the beaches, at home. They have food. They live in families, which was a great experience to know. I didn't know that.
And one of the tourists there ending that report, written by Suhail Mugabe and presented by Mimi Mefo.
Now, a reminder of our top story today, Top Story Africa. We covered about Nigeria's Buhari's list of cabinet nominees, which it was 43, which is, it has been, today is the assessment going on. And surprisingly,
people have been very, very disappointed by this.
No under 40.
No, you're crazy.
And a very few women in there.
Indeed.
And then we do have some comments here, and one is from you, Mwana Nenyu Ngibo. You're saying these are the same recycled good-for-nothing politicians who have kept Nigeria in perpetuity. Some have been in power for 24 years.
And John again says Nigeria needs a whole overhaul, not young, but old people. Anyways, thanks for all of your comments. It's been a pleasure. My name is Abubakar Jallo.
And I'm Assumpta Lattus. Thank you for listening.
Bye. DW. Made for Minds.